Hey guys, this is Vyom Joshi with Superior North. Welcome back to my channel. Today we will be talking about BorgWarner, which is one of the 25 largest automotive suppliers in the world. Value investors such as Charles Bobrinsky and John Rogers from the Ariel Funds have the stock in their portfolio. In this video, we will be talking about the company's business by going over its annual report, then review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios, and finally find the intrinsic value of the company. So let's dive in and review BorgWarner.
Hey guys, let's start off by looking at the Form 10-K, which is the annual report that BorgWarner filed with the SEC. This is for the fiscal year that ended December 31st, 2021. And on page 5 of this report, the company talks about its business. BorgWarner states that it is a global product leader in clean and efficient technology solutions for combustion, hybrid, and electric vehicles. Its products help improve vehicle performance, propulsion efficiency, stability, and air quality. The company manufactures and sells its products worldwide, primarily to OEMs for light vehicles such as passenger cars, sports utility vehicles, SUVs, vans, and light trucks. After that, the company talks about its electrification portfolio strategy. BorgWarner announced a plan to dispose a certain of internal combustion assets, targeting disposition of assets generating approximately $1 billion in annual revenue in the succeeding 12 to 18 months and approximately $3 to $4 billion in annual revenue by 2025. The company is targeting its revenue from products for pure electric vehicles to be over 25% of its total revenue by 2025 and approximately 45% of its total revenue by 2030. Next, the company talks about a couple of its recent acquisitions that it made. I would want to go over this Delphi Technologies PLC acquisition, where the company states that in order for this deal to go through, it delivered consideration of approximately $2.4 billion, including approximately 34 million shares of common stock of the company valued at about $1.5 billion. At the end, BorgWarner claims that this acquisition has strengthened the company's electronics and power electronics products, strengthened its capabilities and scale, enhanced key combustion, commercial vehicle, and aftermarket product offerings, and positioned the company for greater growth as electrified propulsion systems gain momentum. Next, the company talks about its four reportable segments, which are air management, e-propulsion and drivetrain, fuel injection, and aftermarket. Over here, it lays down the sales numbers from each segment. We can see that the air management segment brought in about $7.2 billion. The e-propulsion and drivetrain brought in about $5 billion. Fuel injection brought in about $1.8 billion. And aftermarket sales brought in about $853 million. Overall, the company's 2021 net sales amounted to about $14.8 billion. Next, the company goes into detail about each reportable segment. The first one is the air management segment, which develops and manufactures products to improve fuel economy, reduce emissions, and enhance performance. The air management segment's technologies include turbochargers, e-boosters, e-turbos, timing systems, emission systems, thermal systems, gasoline injection technologies, smart remote actuators, and so forth. On the next page, the company outlines sales of turbochargers for light vehicles represented 19%, 24%, and 28% of the company's net sales for the year ended December 31st, 2021, 2020, and 2019, respectively. The second business segment is the e-propulsion and drivetrain segment, which include rotating electrical components, power electronics, control modules, software, friction and mechanical products for automatic transmission, and torque management products. The company claims that this segment's rotating electrical component portfolio meets the demands for increasing vehicle electrification, improved efficiency, reduced weight, and lowered electrical and mechanical noise. The third business segment is the fuel injection segment, which develops and manufactures gasoline and diesel fuel injection components and systems. Its gasoline fuel injection portfolio includes a full suite of fuel injection technologies, including pumps, injectors, fuel rail assemblies, and complete systems that deliver greater efficiency for traditional and hybrid vehicles with gasoline combustion engines. The fourth and last business segment is its aftermarket segment. The aftermarket segment sells products and services to independent aftermarket customers and original equipment service customers. On the next page, the company provides us information based on the geographic locations. It says that during the year that ended December 31st, 2021, approximately 17% of the company's net sales were generated in the United States, and 83% of the sales were generated outside the United States. Next, the company states that approximately 76% of the company's net sales were for light vehicle applications, 11% for commercial vehicle applications, 4% were for off-highway vehicle applications, and 9% were to distributors of aftermarket replacement parts. On the next page, the company talks about its two biggest customers. For the year 2021, Ford accounted for about 10% of its net sales, and Volkswagen amounted for about 9% of its net sales. Finally, let's go over page 124 of this report, where the company goes over its segment earnings. We can see that for the fiscal year 2021, if we compare these numbers to that of the net sales numbers that we looked at, the air management has a margin of about 14.7%. So what this means is every $100 that the air management segment made in sales, by the time it paid for its cost of goods, operating expenses, and non-operating expenses, that segment had $14.7 left as profit. Similarly, the e-propulsion and drivetrain has a margin of about 9.03%. The fuel injection has a margin of about 9.3%. The aftermarkets has a margin of about 12.5%. And the segment overall margin is about 12.35%. Now that we have a brief understanding of the company's business and its four reportable segments, let's review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios. Hey guys, I'm on Morningstar looking at BorgWarner. Under key ratios, we have the financials. The first item on the list is the revenue. The revenue is the top line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that the company brings in via sales. Back in 2012, the company's revenue was about $7 billion. And for the year 2021, it was about $14.8 billion. Over the past 10 years, the company's revenue has been trending upwards. Next is the operating income. The operating income is the amount of money that's left with the company once we subtract the cost of goods and operating expenses from the company's revenue. Back in 2012, the company's operating income was about $820 million. And for the year 2021, it was $1.4 billion. After that, looking at the net income is the bottom line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that's left with the company once it pays for the cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes. Back in 2012, the company's net income was about $500 million. And for the year 2021, it was about $537 million. BorgWarner's net income has always been positive, which shows that the company has always reported a profit. Ideally, we want the company's revenue, operating income, as well as net income to have a similar trend. That is, we want these numbers to be positive, staying steady, or increasing. Next is the dividends per share. Back in 2013, the company paid out about 25 cents per share as dividend. And for the year 2021, that number was about 68 cents per share as dividend. Ever since 2013, the company has consistently been paying out dividends. Next is the shares outstanding. Back in 2012, the company had 243 million shares outstanding. And for the year 2021, it had 240 million shares outstanding. When we look at the past 10-year trend, we can see that from 2012 all the way through 2019, the company's shares outstanding number was decreasing. This tells us that the company was buying back its shares during this time. However, after 2019, the company's shares outstanding number has been growing. This is due to the recent acquisitions that the company has made through equity financing. Ideally, we want the company's shares outstanding number to be staying steady or decreasing, because when a company buys back its shares, it actually helps increase the existing shareholders' ownership within the company. Finally, looking at the book value per share, the book value is what we get when we subtract the company's total liabilities from its total assets. Back in 2012, the company's book value was about $13.34 per share, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about $28.95 per share. Over the past 10 years, the company's book value per share has always been positive, which tells us that the company always had more assets than liabilities on its balance sheet. Finally, looking at the free cash flow. The free cash flow is what we get when we subtract the company's capital spending from its operating cash flow. Back in 2012, the company's free cash flow was $471 million. And for the year 2021, it was $638 million. Ideally, we want the company's free cash flow to be positive, staying steady, or increasing. I will be using the 2021 free cash flow of $638 million from my discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Now let's look at the profitability of the company, focusing on the net margin. The net margin is the ratio of the company's bottom line to its top line, so it compares the company's net income to its revenue. Back in 2012, the company's net margin was 6.97%, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was 3.62%. What this means is every $100 that the company made in sales over the past 12 months, by the time it paid for its cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes, it had $3.62 left as pure profit. Ideally, we want the company's net margin number to be positive, staying steady, or increasing. Next is the return on equity. The return on equity is the ratio of the company's net income to its shareholders' equity. Warren Buffett prefers to only invest in securities that have a return on equity of 8% or greater every year for the past 10 years. Back in 2012, the company's return on equity was about 18%, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 8%. The three ways that the company can report high return on equity numbers is first, when the company takes on more debt. That is, when the company becomes more leveraged. Second is when the company's income numbers go up. And third, when the company buys back its shares. Next is the return on invested capital. This number gives an idea of how good the management is at allocating the company's capital and getting a return on that investment. BorgWarner's return on invested capital for the past 12 months is 9.58%. BorgWarner's weighted average cost of capital, also known as the company's hurdle rate, is 8.09%. Since the company's weighted average cost of capital is less than the company's return on invested capital, we can safely say that management is creating value for its shareholders. Finally, looking at the interest coverage, this number compares the company's income to its interest obligations, so it gives an idea of how many times can the company pay off its interest using its income in that calendar year. Back in 2012, the company's interest coverage was about 20.31 times, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 8.51 times. Benjamin Graham, the father of Fidelity Investing, preferred to only invest in securities that had an interest coverage of 5 times or higher. Now let's look at the financial health and liquidity ratios. The first item on the list is the current ratio. The current ratio compares the company's current assets to its current liabilities. A current ratio greater than 1.0 tells us that the company has enough assets to fulfill its liabilities over the next 12 months. Ideally, we want to see the company's current ratio to be greater than 1.0. It's even better if it's greater than 1.5. Back in 2012, the company's current ratio was at 1.54, and for the latest quarter, it's at 1.74. Next is the quick ratio. The quick ratio is similar to the current ratio, except disregard the inventory component. In other words, quick ratio is equal to current assets minus inventory divided by current liabilities. A quick ratio greater than 1.0 tells us that the company does not have to rely on selling its inventory in order to fulfill its current liabilities. Back in 2012, the company's quick ratio was at 1.16, and for the latest quarter, it's at 1.25. Both the current and quick ratios tell us that the company is not in a liquidity bind and that it has enough liquidity in its system to survive for the next 12 months. After that, looking at the financial leverage, the financial leverage compares the company's total assets to its shareholders' equity. A financial leverage of 1.0 tells us that all of the company's assets are financed via shareholders' equity. A financial leverage of 2.0 tells us that half of the company's assets are financed via liabilities and half of them are financed via shareholders' equity. Back in 2012, the company's financial leverage was at 2.08, and for the latest quarter, it's at 2.39. Over the past 10 years, the company's financial leverage has stayed fairly consistent. Finally, looking at the debt-to-equity ratio, this ratio compares the company's total debt to its shareholders' equity. Ideally, we want to see the company's debt-to-equity ratio to be less than 1.0. It's even better if it's less than 0.5. Back in 2012, the company's debt-to-equity ratio was at 0.27, and for the latest quarter, it's at 0.64. Now let's look at the efficiency ratios. The first item on the list is the day sales outstanding. This number gives an idea of how many days go by from the day the company recognizes its sale to the date actually receives cash for that service rendered. Back in 2012, the company's day sales outstanding was about 52 days, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 63 days. Ideally, we want to see the company's day sales outstanding number to be staying steady or decreasing. What we do not want to see is a company whose day sales outstanding number is growing rapidly, as it tells us that the company's management is being aggressive with its accounting, as it's trying to recognize its revenue sooner so that it can inflate its income numbers on its income statement. In the case of BorgWarner, the company's day sales outstanding number has slowly been trending upwards. However, it's not growing at a rapid pace where it's a cause of concern, but it's certainly something to keep an eye on. Next is the day's inventory. This number gives an idea of how many days does the company's product sit in its inventory before it's sold. Ideally, we want the company's day's inventory number to be staying steady or decreasing. What we do not want to see is a company whose day's inventory number is growing, because we don't want to see a company whose inventory is just lingering around on its balance sheet. We'd rather see that inventory be pushed onto the company's income statement and be realized as a profit. Back in 2012, the company's day's inventory was about 28.79 days, and for the year 2021, it was about 43 days. So we can see that the company was more efficient with its inventory back in 2012 than it is today. Finally, looking at the payables period, this number gives an idea of how many days does the company take to pay suppliers. Ideally, we want to see the company's payables period to be staying steady or decreasing. What we do not want to see is a company whose payables period is growing rapidly, as that tells us that the company's management is trying to hold on to its cash in order to artificially inflate its cash flow numbers on its cash flow statement. BorgWarner's payables period back in 2012 was about 55 days, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 70 days. The company's payables period has slowly been trending upwards. However, it's not growing at a rapid pace where it's a cause of concern. Now let's look at the company's current valuation. The first item on the list is the price-to-earnings ratio. BorgWarner's price-to-earnings is at 17.3. The company's price-to-book is at 1.3. The company's price-to-sales is at 0.6. The company has a price-to-cash flow of 7.1. And finally, the company has a dividend yield of 1.8%. When we compare these current valuation metrics to the company's five-year average, we can see that on all the valuation metrics, the company is undervalued right now compared to its five-year average. If we compare BorgWarner's current valuation to the S&P 500, and the S&P 500 is the aggregate of the top 500 companies in the United States, And we can think about the S&P 500 as our opportunity cost. On all the valuation metrics, BorgWarner is currently undervalued when compared to the S&P 500. Now let's look at BorgWarner's discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Over here, I pasted the company's 2021 free cash flow number that I got from Morningstar, which was $638 million. I'm using an annual growth rate of free cash flow to be 6%. What this means is I expect the company's free cash flow to grow at 6% every year for the next 10 years. I'm using a discount rate of 10%. What this means is I want this investment to give me an annual return of 10%. In other words, I want to double my investment in about 7 years. I'm using a long-term growth rate of 2.949%. What this means is after the 10-year mark into perpetuity, I expect the company's free cash flow to grow at 2.949%. This number is in line with the 30-year U.S. Treasury yield. The company has 240 million shares outstanding and has a long-term debt of $4,261 million. After taking all of these inputs into account, we get the company's intrinsic value to be about $30 per share. And when we compare this intrinsic value to the company's current stock price, which is about $37.86 per share, we can see that the company's current stock is trading about 1.27 times the company's intrinsic value. The way we calculate this intrinsic value is we look at what the free cash flows would be every year for the next 10 years. We sum up all those free cash flows, which come out to about $5.2 billion. Then we look at what the free cash flows would be after the 10-year mark into perpetuity. We sum all those up to get the intrinsic value to be about $11 billion. From this number, we subtract the long-term debt and divide by the shares outstanding to get the intrinsic value per share to be about $30. If you disregard the perpetuity component, in other words, if you think that BorgWarner is only going to grow for the next 10 years and then it'll cease to exist, then we get the intrinsic value without the perpetuity to be about $4 per share. If you disregard the debt, in other words, if you think that BorgWarner is going to grow into perpetuity, so there's no point for us to worry about the company paying off its debt, then we get the intrinsic value without the debt to be about $48 per share. Finally, let's try to figure out what kind of return can we expect to get on this investment if you were to invest in the security at the current stock price. For that, I will run a goal seek analysis. I will set myself to the intrinsic value. My two value will be the current stock price, which is $37.86 per share. And I will run this analysis by changing my discount rate. What I get is if I were to invest in the security at the current stock price of about $37.86 per share, I can expect to get an annual return of about 9% on this investment. Overall, BorgWarner has good fundamentals. The company's two biggest customers are Ford and Volkswagen. Majority of the company's sales comes from international markets. So if there is a downturn in the international economies, or if the international currencies devalue against the dollar, then BorgWarner's top line number is going to suffer. Hey guys, that is all I had for you this week. Hopefully you found this video on BorgWarner interesting. If you like this content, please do like, share, comment, and subscribe. And if you have any suggestions on which stock I should review next, please leave it in the comment section below. I'll greatly appreciate it. Thank you.